This is TV Talk Machine, a podcast about television. I am Jason Snell, and I'm joined by your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be back podcasting with you again, although we really need to admit nothing about past podcasts we've done. It's a clean slate. It's a tabula rasa now.
It's absolutely a clean slate. If someone wanted to do some digging into, like, historically, it would really be a waste of their time.
Yeah, that's well said. There were many podcasts that were made. Don't listen to them. You will learn nothing. You will not be informed. You may actually become dumber if you listen.
That is true. I did a recent version that was a little bit smarter.
Yes.
But I believe it was the equivalent of like basement tapes quality. So that can be kind of annoying. Yeah. So this is really a fresh start for TVTM.
Yeah, it is. It is a fresh start. The idea here is that you and I are going to talk on a regular basis about TV. You obviously watch a lot of it. It is your job. You get paid to do it and then have opinions about it. I guess they pay you more for the writing than for the watching.
Well, I would hope actually, if I could charge them for the watching, I would make a lot more money, because, I mean, it just never ends. It really is. One of the things I've said in the past, Jason, and you've, I'm sure, heard me say it, is that when I first started out, at some point I was like, God, television really needs to go to a 52-week season. Year-round television is the future. And now that it's here, it's be careful what you wish for.
You made a horrible mistake.
Yes, I made a horrible mistake. There is no break.
No. It never ends. So, you know, so we're talking, and this is the start of the traditional TV season, and there are a lot of new shows premiering because of the networks. Even the networks with the year-round schedules, they still bring out the big guns in the fall, right?
They do. It's a really interesting problem, I think, in as a description to talk about with readers and now listeners. And that is that we do live in a 52-week season. Everybody talks about a 52-week season. But as far as, and I think we'll get to a point where, you know, there really is no stopping and starting that anybody has in their mind. But right now, I think there's still some remnants of the fall television season. That's just a term that's in our mind. We think, okay, fall, everybody's going back to school, right? Summer's over. Everybody's back to work. Football starting. The weather's changing. There's less sun. It's in our brains to say, okay, now we sort of get in the living room and we share this national treasure that is TV, and it all starts at once. Well, at some point, that's not really going to be true, but I think we're still, even though we're saying we're in a 52-week season, right about September is when the bulk of at least the broadcast network stuff gets put out. We might get to a point where I think it'll start coming earlier in August, and it'll stretch farther throughout the year. But yeah, September remains the big bulk.
It feels like some of this is about having marketing muscle behind this stuff to get people to watch. Like the networks all have football deals. And I feel like one of the reasons that they premiere shows this time of year is because they can promote them on their football broadcasts and get them in front of people. And it's like, you know, a marketing push. You can't do necessarily a marketing push all year round. Even the movie studios pick their spots about, like, these movies come out in the summer and these movies come out in the holidays. And then there's a trickle kind of the rest of the year. But I don't know. It doesn't feel like it used to, where, like, literally every show started in about 3 weeks in September. It's definitely spread out because all the cable stuff comes and goes throughout the year.
Right. And I think I still think that they're the net. When I say they, I mean the networks. I still think that they are stuck in this. They're in a little bit of a rut because they're changing 50 some odd years of history, and right, change is really slow in Hollywood. But they're going to get there because it doesn't make any financial sense to launch at the same time. Yes, they can promo off the backs of football, and football is by far the most popular thing on television right now. So you can promote off of that, but there's still some drawbacks in the demographics of who watches sports. So who can you?
You're promoting a certain kind of thing, ideally, if you're promoting off of football because of the demographics of who watches football. Although it also gives you, like, football season lasts a while. You can launch things across months and months. But one of my complaints about September is, and you know, we're going to talk about what people should be watching for, is there's so much dropping at once. And I'm sure there are perfectly good shows that die largely because they're premiering with 20 other things instead of getting a lot of promotion in, you know, the middle of February or something, which is maybe a bad time to promote it, but there's nothing else going on, so people exactly. might notice it. Like right exactly. now, it's like there's four different shows on four different networks simultaneously, and, you know, I'm not going to watch them, and yeah. then they're going to be gone.
It's broken, and they'll figure it out, because, again, it's not financially solid to do it this way. It's also, if everybody is work, if all the five networks and the fifth is the CW, if the networks are casting at the same time, well, then you don't have enough good actors to right. go around. You know, if they're assembling their writing staffs at the same time because all their pilots got picked up, well, then your writing staff is too thin. So they'll eventually get it worked out where it will be a true 52-week season. But, you know, and they have made improvements of moving into October and November. Not so much December, but October, November, they moved some shows into there when traditionally they haven't really done that. And I think that's smart. But yeah, we're still in the world where, you know, like you said, 20-something, 30-something shows are going to start in like the next week.
Yikes. So you've seen, I assume, pretty much everything that's going to be coming?
Yes, I have seen everything. I didn't watch any of the mid-season shows because historically one or two or more of those shows don't even get on the air.
And then they'll change them. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be redone. I mean, we have to deal with that in the fall as it is, where they reshoot the pilot. And, you know, and a lot of this stuff is bad. This is a particularly bad year. So what you don't want to do is like, oh, yeah, I'll watch that crappy 22-minute sitcom again because mm-hmm. they've changed the grandmother out. So, sure.
So, do you have favorites? I mean, this is, I think, the number one thing this time of year would be to have somebody who's seen it all say, yeah, here are the ones that you should spend your time on.
Yeah, and that's, you know, let's face it, that's kind of what TV critics yeah. are doing these days.
You waste your time so we don't have to.
Right, we take the bullet. And also, you know, it's almost like a public service. We, you know, later on when we can get into the depth of quality and can sort of do a deeper dive or into a show and find out its qualities, that's great. But right now, it's all most people want to know is, look, I'm overwhelmed. I only have a certain amount of time. And I have returning series. And I have my favorites. What's the new stuff that I can add? And I think, you know, if you want to take a perverse view of it this year, there's not much to add this year. It was for the networks. It was a very, very poor development season. So I'll tell you, right off the bat, the shows that I liked, the two that surprised me, are both come from the CW, and that really surprised wow. no one more than the CW. I mean,
you've been kind of hard on them over the
I
years.
I've been hard on them for a number of years, so I think they're still kind of in shock and stunned that I'm so on board with their. They have two new shows, and I think that they're like in my book they go like 1-2. The first one is Jane the Virgin, and it's based on a telenovela and a Mexican telenovela, and it's really really good and. Gina Rodriguez is a breakout star. It's basically balancing some really interesting tonal shifts in that it's light, it's funny, it's a little bit soapy, it's winking at itself for being a soap. There's magical realism in that, you know, Jane is a virgin and she accidentally gets pregnant and by insemination. And, you know, you have to just go with it. But the show is really good at winking at it when you're running with it. The writing is really kind of a surprise for me on that end. And it's just really upbeat, funny, creative. And, you know, Gina Rodriguez is going to be a breakout star. I just think, you know, we've only seen one episode. It could go sideways. That's the caveat for all new shows. But I really like that one a lot.
So it's based on a telenovela. So I guess that's you talk about the tone. That's the thing that concerns me about it is having not seen it. Is it like Ugly Betty was based on a telenovela
it
and it was super heightened and everything was just like over the top and it, to the point that it kind of drove me nuts. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you strike a balance between like we know we're soapy and yet we're still, you know, something that you can take seriously.
That's good. And again, I don't know what the exact formula is for that, but I think that they hit that in Jane the Virgin. And, you know, I think Gina Rodriguez is a little bit like America Ferrera in that she's this kind of fresh face. But it's different because I think that in the first one, they really, really played up that zaniness. And this one, they're certainly winking at you a little bit. For example, she'll be on the bus Jane will be on the bus and she looks up and there's a bus poster about a telenovela, and the guy is basically talking to her from the poster, and they can balance moments like that with the fact that, like, you know, she really is a real person. She's well rounded. She's got opinions. She's there are these typical soap elements, right? She's, you know, there's a really rich guy who she had a crush on when she was 12, you know, and then there's the evil wife. There's all these things that are predictable, but they kind of know what they're doing. It's really hard to explain this one other than I think it's just like people should. I know that they historically probably have not watched the CW, so find that channel, give it a shot, and then make your judgment there.
Right. So even though it's got some broad characters in it, she's not a broad character. You can take her seriously. She's
absolutely great. She's great. Super well grounded, and I think that's partly what makes it so. It's just really fresh. I think it is, and I'm not even exaggerating. It is by far the best pilot I saw this fall.
Wow. All right. I'm putting on my TiVo. October 13th, it looks like, is when that
Look
airs.
At you. Very good. Very
I'm trying
good.
To, I got a list here. I'll put the list in the show notes, too, so people can see it. So that's one CW show.
Right. The other is The Flash.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, dare I dream that The Flash. I remember The Flash from the 90s when it was John Wesley Shipp and Amanda Pace doing it. I watched that show when I was in college. So this is a spinoff from Arrow, right?
Yes, it's a spinoff from Arrow, and it's doing the whole the based on the comic book.
Yeah.
He runs fast.
He's a fast guy.
He runs very fast, yes. But I think what makes it work is it kind of works on two different levels. It has that sort of like, okay, we have some CW stars in it who, yeah, it's a little bit light. This is not like a HBO level quality of acting in part of it, but then they supplemented those young, good-looking people with some older actors, and I think that gave it a little more gravitas and settled it down a little bit. And I think people can come to it from the comic book perspective, and then they can come to it as just like, hey, you know what? For what it is, this. The Flash is actually getting it done on a couple of different levels, and I liked it. I was, you know, it for the CW, it's on target, it's on demo. I like Arrow.
So Arrow's a little dark and gritty. Is The Flash more like more fun, or is it in the same kind of tone as Arrow?
No, the Flash is more fun. Hmm. You know, it's a little bit the pilot is basically them figuring out how he got these powers. I mean, if you've read the comic books, you know that. So they're trying to figure out how he got the powers. And then it's like, okay, how do we harness this? And it's, you know, it's the first part of it is, you know, him saying, okay, how do I figure out how to run? What suit do I wear? Who's going to make me this suit? All that kind of stuff. And so I think that from that perspective, it's a little hokey at the beginning, right? I mean, that's just the discovery. Once he's in the suit and going, and you've got the premise for the series up, then I think it works. I think that it's Barry Allen, right? So isn't it Barry Allen? Isn't that his?
Yeah,
you're the Flash expert.
Barry Allen. Yep.
Yeah, and so
I wouldn't say I'm a Flash expert. So I know a few things about the comic books. So sure.
I love that. I do kind of want to call you a Flash expert.
Not yet. I'm like a Flash amateur.
Oh, you're a Flash amateur. Yeah. No, I think that I think it works on a couple of different levels. And once he's in the suit and he's going on, then you're going to say, oh, okay, right, I got it. Like Grant Gustin is the guy who stars as Barry. And
then Tom Cavanaugh is like his mentor, right?
Yeah, Tom Cavanaugh and Jesse Martin.
Guy.
Yeah, he's right. He's Harrison Wells.
Ooh,
yeah.
That sounds like a science guy.
He's the science guy who's created the device that somehow I'm not going to ruin it for anybody that gets it. But Jesse L. Martin, who you know from Law and Order,
yeah.
So
I would think he would bring a little weight to it that he's not like. I mean, because that's not an actor. That's an actor I would take seriously in things
yeah.
he's doing, right?
I mean, you could even take Tom Cavanaugh. I mean, yeah. Great, he was in Ed, right? But he's a solid actor, and yes, he's really likable, right? I mean, that's absolutely, I think that's Tom Cavanaugh's, that's his whole stock.
Right, so likable science guy, that's even better.
Right. And, you know, I, not knowing a whole lot of comic book history, because I didn't read a whole lot of comic books, I guess I was kind of like, oh, right, there's a twist. Oh, that's cool. But I did like the fact that you had actors, more adult actors, because this is the CW, you have more adult actors than Cavanaugh and Martin, who kind of added the gravitas to hold it down. But I, you know what? It's on target for the CW. It fits well with Arrow. And I liked it. It was a fun pilot.
All right. October 7th.
Ooh, yes. Awesome. Good.
So you set your DVRs.
The other one that it's also like a comic book, obviously a comic book setup, but it's the origin story is Gotham. And I'm sure you've seen pretty much what every trailer there is for that.
Sure.
I really liked that as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was unsure how that was going to go, because it's sort of like, you know, it's the Commissioner Gordon story, because Bruce Wayne is just a kid. So it's all the kind of like young future villains of Gotham City kind of show. So what is that show? Explain to me what that show is, because I look at it and think, I don't know what I'm seeing here, because it's not like Smallville or something where it's the path that Bruce Wayne takes to be Batman, right? It's really about Commissioner Gordon and like the Penguin and Catwoman and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
It's the origin story of all those people before they even know who and what they would become. But the difference I think before you see it, it's easy to dismiss it as like, oh, it's a Batman story without Batman, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the easiest thing. But in this instance, I think what makes it work is that it was created and written and directed by Bruno Heller, and he did Rome.
Oh yeah.
And so he's solid. He's also like one of the smarter guys in the business when it comes to sort of conceptualizing a series and not just like saying, yeah, I'll take this gig and I'll take a paycheck. You know, he put some time into it, and his idea was the only way this series works, you know, in his words were like, the only way this series works is if everybody buys into it and they're not waiting around for Batman to grow up. So how do I create this world where you have these emerging characters who will in time, the show will be long over before they're actually come to fruition. They'll be who they are, but as we know the Joker, or as we know the Riddler in their fully adult realization, we'll never get there. The show would have to be on the air for like 15 years. But so his idea was their stories can still be very interesting, but at heart, Gotham is its own character. And he's created this thing that looks like New York in the 80s mixed with a little bit of you know, the best dark sci-fi shows. And so it looks a little bit fantastical in that the city is, you know, it's dark and scary, but it also looks real, like it was New York before Giuliani and company cleaned it all up. So and then you have the main characters who are coming together and trying to fight crime at that time. And for me, it works, you know, with Donna Logue and Ben McKenzie in these roles together, and even Jada Pinkett Smith, you know, as Fish Mooney. I think that those three work well as the starting point, the launching point. Then you start to see who the Penguin is and that girl's going to be Poison Ivy, et cetera.
So what's the tone? Is this like a dark drama, or is this a lighter, more fun kind of thing? It sounds like, from, you know, Gotham City, how could it ever be fun? It sounds like, yeah, a really depressing place, right?
Well, here again, these are the ones that as we go forward, even with Jane the Virgin, in maybe even The Flash, we have to watch the tone. And again, we meaning critics, only had the first pilot, so we can only go off the first hour, and whatever happens later, you know, it's buyer beware. But for Gotham, it's dark. It's a dark tone, which I like. It's almost like watching a cop series. That's the adult allure of it. It's almost like watching like a new gritty cop series. But at the same time, Donald Logue actually brings a level of humor to it that's like a little comic booky on top of being, you know, he's like, mm-hmm. He's been in Gotham a lot longer than Ben McKenzie's character, who will become Commissioner Gordon. And of course, you know, Gordon is the do-gooder who always doesn't want any little crime to go unpunished. Whereas Donald Logue's character is always like saying, hey, look, this is Gotham. You got to just write this this beating we just witnessed in the alley. That's business as usual in Gotham. And he kind of has a little bit of a smarmy attitude about that. So he's partly like a he's partly a, I think, very, very honed detective who's been in it for a while and is jaded, but also is a little bit comic book funny, if that makes sense. It's definitely a tone thing that works in the pilot.
All right. Donald Logue is great. So I can totally see him playing that kind of character.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's one. Well, all those three are to be watched. If can they maintain that? I will say the reason that I gave it such such a positive review is I really love sitting. I really love Heller, and I trust his vision. Sitting through the panel when the TV critics met them in July at the TV critics press tour, he was sophisticated. He kind of had a total. He never wavered on what the show was about, which is a really good sign.
Yeah, that's good. That's, I mean, a pilot is part of a, you know, a hope that the series, a pilot's not a series, right?
Right.
So you got to hope that the pilot shows something and that the actor shows something and that the people who are the creative forces behind it are some, you know, are trustworthy. They're not going to screw this up, because I've seen a lot of really great pilots that ended up as terrible shows. So.
Oh, a ton. And you know, in my review of it, I've already reviewed it. We can, you know, people can find that.
Sure.
But that what I compared it to was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a very similar story in that, you know, people went to it like, oh, great, we get S.H.I.E.L.D., but we don't get any of these great Marvel characters, right? I mean, it's just the actual agents.
Right.
and everybody was like, well, that's not very fun, you know? And I think that, you know, when I watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I was like, okay, I don't think that other than the obvious, I don't think that the actual actors were that compelling. They weren't characters I really wanted to follow, whereas Gotham comes to me, I think, more fully formed. You know, it's not a show that's absent a purpose or absent just because it doesn't have Batman. It's really not about that. If you come to it only saying, I want to see Batman, this is not the show for you. If you come to it with an open mind saying, okay, within this history of Batman, this level of storytelling, this part of the story, I'm fascinated by that. Let's see what this guy can do with it. If you come open-minded, I think you'll be impressed.
All right. September 22nd, right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else new that you're liking that do you think people should check out?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a gigantic fall off after that.
Wow.
So I will go over it a little quickly. I guess there's probably some order to this. I'll stick with the dramas at the beginning. Well, actually, the one that there is one comedy that kind of stands out, and it was not a very good year for comedies. And the one that kind of stands out a little bit is Black-ish. On ABC, and it's basically, it's funny, it has a point of view, and that's really important because a lot of times comedies are just about nothing. But this one is like, okay, Anthony Anderson plays a father. He's married to Tracy Ellis Ross, who's mixed race, obviously, and he's like, his kids do not see through a filter of race, whereas he does. It's for him, it's really important to sort of like be Black. And the kids are, you know, they're not looking like that at all. They're very modern kids. And when he starts to see in the pilot, like, you know, his kid wants a bar mitzvah. And even though it's like, he's not Jewish, he's like, what? You know? And so he's like, have we raised kids that are so, so colorblind that they don't have any history? I mean, it's kind of interesting as a series. And I will say, as an aside, this year, this season, Jason, is probably the biggest season we've seen in a while for diversity, that they're at least stepping up, and the networks are stepping up and they're trying more diverse shows.
That's good.
Yeah. And I think, again, like, you know, Larry Wilmore from The Daily Show.
Right.
He's a writer on this. So he's
good.
Very funny. I think that it's in good hands.
Didn't he get the Colbert slot too?
Yes. So
the Minority Report, I think is the name of it, which is a hilarious name.
Well, he was senior black correspondent before,
well,
yes.
Well, didn't Larry Wilmore, I mean, he was the creative force behind the Bernie Mac show, too, right? And
yes,
then, and then got fired mm-hmm. by Bernie Mac.
Right. He was on that for a while. He did some stuff with Everybody Hates Chris. He's,
right. Great
he's
show.
He's got a real voice.
Yeah, absolutely. No,
and then it's like the comedies are kind of grating. I mean, you go from really terrible, which is this Mulaney. I'm not sure you've seen that.
I haven't.
It's don't even bother with that. There's almost nothing. The McCarthys is this really offensive CBS series you can avoid, which is coming out, I think, on the 22nd or 23rd. And it's just about an Irish family. It's just so CBS typical and like an anvil. That's no good. Manhattan Love Story is another comedy everybody can miss. It's the most annoying thing. It's sexist and stupid and poorly acted. And a worst part of it is that everybody they talk in thought bubbles, right? So they'll talk to each other and then there'll be voiceovers. Every character has a voiceover. Yeah, it's like imagine like 100 voice bubbles going off at once. And all you want to do is say, shut up. Everybody, just shut up. So it's don't watch that because that's what you'll do. The ones that possibly might work as comedies, there's a romantic comedy called A to Z. I didn't like it. I thought it was cloying and it's a rom-com. That's cloying is just part of it.
Yeah.
There's a there's another one called Cristela, which will come up later. It's about a Mexican woman who becomes a lawyer. It has a point of view, but unlike Blackish, it's not funny. She's really great, but the writing is terrible. Marry Me is another one where you're like, okay, I think there's some talent on the writing staff, but the pilot is really bad, so that one could probably be skipped. The only one that I think that might work and the pilot was off-putting, so people would have to have patience, is Selfie, which I think right. I think we're going to probably look back on that. They're probably going to look back on that and say, I probably shouldn't have called it Selfie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But it's basically it's great casting, you know.
Well, that's John what Cho. I was going to say is John Cho and Karen Gillan are people mm-hmm. that I would love to see on a TV show together. But when I looked at the pilot, I thought it was really it was like trying to be off-putting almost to make her unpleasant. It was like, why are you doing this? This is not what you should be doing with your show. But
it's a real stretch. The whole Eliza Doolittle.
It's My Fair Lady with Instagram.
It is. Yeah. Which it just as we talk about it makes me want to throw up in my own mouth.
Yeah.
And I did not really like the pilot, but at the end of the pilot, look, she is adorable, right? She's been in Doctor Who and a number of things. She is really good at what she does. I love the colorblind casting as John Cho as what will turn out to be her love interest. And I think that there might be something to say there. There's some history there in the writing staff. There's some good writers there. I think there might be something to be said about our culture and one person's fascination with collecting friends but not having any friends. But I don't know how long that can be milked.
Well, what strikes me about something like Selfie is it's the kind of pilot that doesn't tell you. I mean, I had a theory for a while that you shouldn't ever make a pilot that shows how everybody met. You should make a pilot that everybody knows each other. And then if you get picked up, go back and make how they met, because it's not representative of what the show is. Like Selfie is like she's at rock bottom. He meets her. He's going to fix her. I doubt the show would never be what the pilot is. The show is going to be some other rhythm about these characters interacting, and it's going to work or it's not going to work. And it's going to make commentary about self-centered, you know, people and social media and things like that. But it's just weird that you look at the pilot and you're like, okay, I'm not sure I know what this show is going to be like. The people seem nice and the writers are kind of smart, but the pilot was annoying. So, I mean, I felt that way about The Big Bang Theory, too. I thought I like that show now. It's a perfectly fine sitcom, but the pilot was just awful and off-putting and not representative of the show.
Absolutely. And that put me off of it for a really long time. You look at FX's series, which it turned out to be, you know, Married turned out to be pretty good and You're the Worst apparently turned out to be pretty good. But I really think that in the world we live in, and, you know, like on Twitter, I follow mostly TV critics. I have a lot of friends who are TV critics, obviously. And there tends to be this, you know, we're obviously trying to fight for really great shows to keep them around and whatnot. And people are talking up You're the Worst as a show that got better and better and better. But my philosophy, Jason, has always been like, I'm going to take this from the perspective of, okay, I might give you a second chance. You will not get a third chance, though. I don't have time for it. Right. I mean, I think that's what the general population is doing when they watch a show. Like, they'll tune in, they'll say, oh yeah, I saw that preview. That looked pretty good. I was watching football. I saw that. If you don't get them in the first time, they probably have too many options and they're not going to come back. If they do come back, because they'll say, okay, you know, I kind of wasted an hour there, but it wasn't so bad. Maybe I'll check it out next week. And or they skip next week and then they hear their friends say, you know, I actually got better. They'll give it a second chance, but they will not give it a third chance. So I don't – when people say, oh, man, by the seventh episode, I was like, no, you don't get that chance. That's not real life.
When you mentioned Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't know why I kept watching it, but that was exactly what happened. It's about midway through the season, they figured out what they had been doing wrong. And the last half of that season is much better, but, you know, three quarters of the audience was gone by then. And it's only because it's, you know, the Marvel Disney ABC axis that it came back. But it was much better by the end. For whoever was left. But I talk to people about that now, and they're like, no, I gave up after four episodes. And they were perfectly right to, because it wasn't any good.
Right. And four is quite a commitment, right?
Well, and it's only because of all the Marvel movies and stuff like that, and my history as a comic book nerd, that I gave it a, you know, if that had been just some random show, there's no way I would have watched past the second episode. And right. Joss Whedon, too, right? And like, oh, come on, guys, get it together. But any random show, it would have been gone after one or two episodes, because it's just not good enough.
Absolutely. I think when you have a backstory like Marvel, and you've got a show, you've got a creator like Joss Whedon, you're going to give it maybe the chances that I say most people won't give it. But those shows are pretty rare. On the other hand, you're right. It did get better. But I always say, like, okay, you know what? Let the show find itself on its own. And for example, I'll go back to what a lot of my colleagues are raving about. You're the Worst, and they're all tweeting right now about they're hoping that FX picks it up. And my feeling is like, okay, you know what? If they pick it up, then I'll go back to find out what I missed.
Sure,
but until they do, I'm not going to bother. And I think that's not a bad way. If you're like, okay, yeah, I kind of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or if I, you know, you could say I like Gotham. I mean, look, there's so much great stuff out there. You don't have to add any of these new shows to it. If buzz is that Gotham is still great after 5 weeks, then you can play catch up pretty sure. Easy. So that's usually my advice to people. But this season, I do want to circle back to your comic book knowledge on one of these ones. But there's a level below Jane the Virgin, The Flash, and Gotham, and even to some extent on the comedies with Black-ish. Those are kind of your four top ones, I think, are mine at least, which is not saying that much, because other than Jane the Virgin and The Flash, there's not much that really stood out. But so the level under that, which I think people might have a handful of shows that they want to give a chance to, one of them is, and I'll start with it because it does come from a comic book, and that's Constantine.
Oh, yeah.
So do you have knowledge about Constantine?
I have a little knowledge about Constantine, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then there was that bad Keanu Reeves movie.
Yes, there was that, which muddies the water.
Yeah, the Hellblazer, and yeah, the idea is that he's like he's sold his soul, and so he's trying to avoid going to hell and staying on Earth, and investigates. And then it's grim, basically, is my understanding. Is at that point it's just a paranormal events. It's grim, supernatural, in that kind of which I make fun of that. Buffy is one of my favorite shows of all time, and it's in that genre too. But that's what it strikes me as, like, he's got his complicated. Or like Sleepy Hollow a little bit, right? There's a complicated kind of devil, demonic backstory, and then there's an interesting character who's solving supernatural mysteries.
Right, every week, which is basically what will happen. And you know what? That's fine. Everybody kind of needs that on their plate. In fact, you just ticked off a bunch of shows that I like Grimm. I don't have to watch it every week. I do like Grimm. I was one of the early supporters of that, so I'm happy that that's around. I love Sleepy Hollow.
I love Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, I can't wait for that to come back. Mm-hmm. But Constantine was pretty interesting. I thought, okay, there's something here. It's not a great pilot. You know, he's obviously a demon slayer, and he's out there. I just thought, okay, there's something here. I'll watch this. It's, if you watch it, you know, that might be one that you tape, and you tape a couple of episodes and don't invest until they kind of figure it out a little bit better. But because they're changing the pilot, they're adding a character.
I read that they recast, and
this is very typical recasting, mm-hmm. you know, and then that changes the dynamics to whoever. But I would say, like, put Constantine on the okay, we'll see level.
All right.
And also on that level is a CBS series, which I know that some people are really hating on. There's a real split, I think, in the ranks on this one, and it's called Scorpion. Have you heard of that?
I have. That's like a nerd procedural, right?
You should actually, like, be the person who just says, you know, just describe it in two words, nerd procedural.
I will be your elevator pitch person.
So, okay, it's partly based on a true story. There is somebody who has one of the highest IQs in the whole world, and, you know, he's not good at social interactions, but he is brilliant at a number of things that somebody with a crazy high IQ would be. And so they fashioned a story. I don't know who said it. I think it was Matt Rausch from TV Guide magazine, where he said, this is basically Big Bang Theory. Stretched out into a drama, but everybody's got they're all nerds with special abilities, and they're all kind of likable, and it actually, you know, and it has Catherine McPhee in it, who's lovely to look at. She plays a waitress with a kid who is developing, you know, she thinks he's just got learning disabilities and might be on the spectrum. Turns out he's going to be one of these kid geniuses. And I like the pilot. It is really far-fetched. I laughed because it goes, I mean, it is crazy over the top. There's airplane, there's cars trying to hook a computer up to an airplane while it's flying 10 feet above it. I mean, it's really out there. But I thought, you know what? I would watch that every week.
Interesting.
You know, you get the math person, you've got the person who deducts personality traits.
Well, and it's a CBS show, right? So, you know, I assume it's got that same kind of feel like a Numbers or something, where it's, you know, they've got a procedural kind of like machine and then quirky characters inside it.
Anything that CBS does that's a procedural, basically you're going to be pretty reassured that it's high quality.
Yep.
It's done about as well as it can be done, and you'll be happy at the end of the hour, and you won't be, your brain won't be drained. So I would put Scorpion in there.
It's on the watch list.
Yeah, it's on the let's see what happens.
Code yellow.
Yeah, and two more are on that list,
right.
And one of them is Forever, which is on ABC, and that's I never can pronounce his name. It's Ian Griff.
Oh, Griff. I think it's just Griffith.
Griffith. Okay. Well, then that would make
it
a lot easier.
Like, it's Welsh, so it's not spelled
it's
like
Welsh.
That.
Yeah. And right, and he was in the, here I am blanking again. He was in this the sailing, epic sailing thing with the, I know that makes no, the epic sailing thing, Jason, doesn't that make any sense to you?
He was also in that awful Fantastic Four movies.
Oh,
he was Mr. Fantastic in those.
Oh, see now, yeah. Right. So, yeah. I love that. Like, he was also in this really crappy thing.
He's in things.
He's in this. No, Horatio Hornblower.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I was a fan of the Horatio Hornblower series. Not a fan that I could remember it at the tip of my tongue, but he was in that. He was really good in that. And Judd Hirsch is in this. So do you remember a series?
New Amsterdam?
Yes.
I know what you're going for here. I saw what the series is about, and I was going to say, Tim, how is this not New Amsterdam? It's about an immortal guy, who's been living for a million years or something, who's
right.
Now solves crimes in the present.
He solves crimes, right. And there,
that was with, Jamie Lannister. That was, I can't pronounce his name either.
Furniture, though.
Okay, fair enough.
He doesn't make furniture, and they had a lot of issues.
But he's a doctor.
He's like a coroner, right?
Who else would you want to be your doctor than a guy who doesn't die?
Right. He kind of understands why you die. He's very keen, and he's had decades to study and read and become a great doctor and and also know people and history and languages. But you know what? I'll tell you what, I did like it, because they, other than the fact that at the when you watch the pilot, he dies and he comes back in a body of water, and because he's Ian Griffith, as you say, and he's a good looking actor with a great body, he's got to come back naked out of the water. So you have to have that shot. Sure. of all the ladies in New York saying, "Oh my God." But he's quite the character. He is a very likable person, and he dies and comes back, and then you keep thinking, okay, you know, and then Judd Hirsch protects his secret, and you kind of figure out that you're revealed in the pilot why Judd Hirsch is protecting his secret. He's the only real human who can die, who knows the secret on forever. But you keep thinking, okay, how does it make sense that the guy dies? And like, no, because he dies in New York a number of times in the pilot. And you're thinking like, okay, what, did nobody see him die? Right? He falls off of a building and lands on top of a taxi cab. Does no one like see that? And like, does he just vanish? And there's a little bit of that going on. Like, what happened to his clothes? Right. Where do his clothes go? If he wakes up naked in a body of water all the time, where's his clothes?
Or is his dead body actually there? And he's now in a like new body.
His
body vanishes?
His body vanishes.
But yeah.
So they were trying to explain the clothes theory at the press tour. I'm not sure. Maybe it turns into particles. I can't. It has issues like that.
Right.
I will say that, like,
I'll accept the immortality, but the clothes is a problem.
The clothes is a tough one. And also, it's like, I will say that they at least plant the seed that they have moved from city to city. Because one of the drawbacks from New Amsterdam is like, okay, dude, you've lived in the same apartment for like a billion years.
Rent control, hello.
Yeah, people know you're not aging. At least in Forever, the idea is that at a certain point, when people start to figure out he's not aging, or if they onto his secret, they move to a new city, and they keep moving around the world. They just happen to be where Judd Hirsch wants to live out his final days in New York City. So I kind of liked it. It does have its issues. Obviously, we've touched on a few of them. That was pretty good.
That's Forever, and ABC.
Forever on ABC. And lastly, on the ones that you can, you know, put on a list of like maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work, is Madam Secretary with Taya Leone.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not a high endorsement, because it's again, it's CBS. It's done really well. She was a CIA agent who quit, and she's married to Tim Daly, and he's a professor, and they've moved, and they're living this idyllic life, and then she gets pulled back in by the president to become the Secretary of State. And I, you know what, this is the year of the Hillary Clinton style. Let's find a powerful woman. We'll put her in politics. She's a badass. Mm-hmm. She's going to be literally the same job Hillary had. But what I liked about this is that Taya Leone is a great actress. And this is one of the only series for women where she's not only good at her job, she actually has she's actually good at her home life. And, you know, if you've watched any amount of television, you know that anybody who's good at their job really sucks at their home life.
Right.
So she's got a nice balance there. It's a really nice portrayal for women on that. Plus she's tough, and I like it. It's good.
So I got to ask you about Grace Point.
Because
I loved the original Broadchurch when it was Broadchurch. Changed the name. That's always a good sign when you obscure the source material.
Right.
And on top of that, they had David Tennant come back and just be the same character again, except with an American accent. What is up with that?
Yes, this is one of those ones where I normally would have put it in this little B group that we just discussed and say, yeah, you know, you can check out Grace Point. But the reason I didn't is because you should just go get Broadchurch. You should just get, it's perfectly encapsulated in what it is. It's brilliant. It was one of the best series in 2013.
It's not like Americans can't. I mean, it's not like it's like the accents are non-understandable. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I joke that, you know, this is the English language version of the English language version, and that's just my gripe. It's like, okay, it's not Japanese, it's not Swedish. Figure it out. His Scottish accent can be sometimes a little bit heavy in the original Broadchurch, mm-hmm. but it frees him up as an actor to do. And I love David Tennant, but he is, it's just weird to have watched Broadchurch and then watch this and think, okay, he doesn't have an accent. In fact, somebody pointed out he doesn't really have an American accent. He just has no accent. So he doesn't seem like he's from anywhere. I think working on that non-accent makes him either that, or he's just done the role so much. It makes him not as intuitively aware and intense as he is in Broadchurch. And then to the argument that most people are making, which is, okay, only critics saw, you know, basically only critics saw Broadchurch, and the rest of America hasn't seen it. Why wouldn't they watch, you know, why wouldn't they watch Grace Point? And my point is like, why would you? I mean, you've got 10 episodes. They're adding two new episodes onto the end of it. But you have this self-contained, generally considered close to a masterpiece. Why would you mess with that? If you can actually find that, which is easily defined,
yes,
you can go out and you can get Broadchurch and you can watch the original and burn up the same amount, two less hours than you would watching the American one. And the acting is better. It's not a shot for shot remake, even though they use the same director. And by that I mean, in the British version, it's much more arty and cinematic. In this one, they try some of those techniques, but it's American television. If you're lingering on like a scene of the mountaintops, or if you have a character who's trying to convey heartache about her son's death, and you want, you know, in the original one, you're going to focus on her for a while so you can actually, without her saying anything, you can feel her pain. In the American version, it's always like, the camera's lingering too long. Cut, cut, cut. So I just think that no matter how well done some people might think it is, it's nowhere near as good as the original.
All right. I believe you. Having watched Broadchurch, I'm right there with you. I'm fascinated to see it, just to see what they did to it. But, I don't see.
I know. I'm the same way. We did talk briefly about like checking in after a certain amount of episodes. Well, I know one critic who was a friend of mine, and he's the only one I know, who has seen the first 7. And according to him, the first 6 are, at least story-wise and plot-wise, identical.
Huh.
And that the 7th one is the first time in the 7th hour, mind you, and there's only 8 in the original. In the 7th hour is where they start to take a little bit more of a detour storytelling wise.
Because they changed the ending. So.
Yeah, because they changed the ending. So I don't even want to. That's too long. That's too many episodes to me. Just go see the original.
Right. Watch the original, and then stop after 6 hours and just flip over to see what happens.
Right.
Who's
right.
This, you know, again? What?
I will say that we have been sort of remiss because here at TV Talk Machine, Jason, because we're falling into old patterns, right? We're talking about network television based, yes, on the old rules of network television season starting in September, and really the best show that's currently out there or about to be out there, the best show of the fall, quote unquote, if you have to break up the season, is not from any of the networks.
What?
It's not from HBO. No, seriously, not at all. It's not from the networks. It's not from HBO. It's not from Showtime. It's from Amazon Studios.
Really?
One of the
Amazon instant video series.
Yes.
Which one, Tim? Which one?
The one that you have to. Now there's a bunch that are up through the end of this month that will.
Right,
you know,
the new pilots for next year.
The new
year,
pilots,
right?
Which is the third batch, and you can vote on them. And there's one from Whit Stillman, et cetera, et cetera. There's good stuff there. But the previous batch, and which I think 5 of dramas got the green light, the one that stands out, it's going to drop. Here we are, like we're record store employees. But it's going to drop on January 26th. I'm sorry, September 26th.
Right.
On Amazon.com, all 10 episodes of Transparent.
All right, which was one of the pilots last year with Jeffrey Tambor.
With Jeffrey Tambor. It is, like, without hesitation. And again, like, here we are talking about the networks, and it's like burying the lead and forgetting to tell you that, you know, something, you've won $1 million. And that is, Transparent is amazing. It is just, as much as I love Jane the Virgin for what it is on a network level, as far as like top tier. What is the next great television series? It's definitely Transparent.
Wow.
And people can absorb that all on the 26th. You can actually go on the site right now and watch the pilot. But as far as like seeing all 10 of them, what an incredible cast. And Jill Soloway is the writer, creator, and director. And, you know, she's done a lot of indie films and great director. She's just told a really, really good story. The basic premise of this, people are like, Transparent with Jeffrey Tambor. And by the way, Jeffrey Tambor, who's done career-defining roles before, has
so many times.
Right? I mean, he is just Larry Sanders Show and Arrested Development. Those are going to go down in history as great roles. But he, I think this is going to take the cake. I think he's going to be the shoe-in for an Emmy. And he plays a guy named Mort, and who becomes Mora. So basically, the transparent is a kind of a pun, but he's transitioning into a woman, and how does that affect his grown children? It is hilarious. It's heart-wrenching. It can be really funny, and it's not just his story. The other kids' stories are really, really well told too. So it's
I read about this, and I didn't get a chance to see the pilot before they took it down. But it's not just his his transition is her transition is a jumping off point for the fact that all of these characters have identity issues or sexual issues, everybody has to sort of like take stock of who they are and where they're going, and it's not just about the one character, which is great because that makes it a rich drama and not a one note story.
Absolutely. So you're not just following the evolution of one character. It's a really diverse family, and the writing is really good. I have the highest praise for Transparent, and that's, people should definitely put that on their radar.
All right. Before we go, anything else that's floating out there that people should be watching this fall? Since we are terrible, I mean, I figured this one we would be talking about the networks and then perhaps never again, because this is the time when the networks drop the big load on us. But if there are other things people should be watching for in the next couple of weeks, you know.
Well, yeah, I think we give
them a big list. I mean, people already have 10 things to watch.
It is a pretty big list.
Watch,
I mean, yeah. we still have time to talk about at some other time, talking about The Affair on Showtime.
All right.
It's almost unfair to bring in cable. I brought in Amazon Studios because it's such a shocker.
Right. But we'll come back to that next time. I wanted to ask you about Outlander too, which is on Stars, which
yep,
I've absolutely. Been watching, and I have I'm all over the map with that. There was an episode I watched, and I was like, why am I watching this show? And then the next one, I'm like, oh wow, this show's really good. And it's like, what, week to week, I'm not quite sure what I think of that show. But
right.
Yeah, we can talk about there's much more. So I think maybe, dare I say it, we have come to the end of episode one of the latest regeneration of the TV Talk Machine. What do you
yes,
think?
Yes, and we covered a lot in this one because,
so
again,
much.
It's so much. And really, we actually saved people a lot of time by saying, anything that we didn't mention, don't watch.
Yeah, that's it. That's right. If it was not mentioned at all, don't watch it. And then also, those things that Tim said were terrible, don't watch those either.
Don't watch those either.
They all started with an M, by the way.
Right,
that's
exactly.
A bad sign. Alphabetically, they're the worst. But not you're the worst, which might be good, but we don't know because you didn't watch.
We're going to wait until that gets renewed, but we're not going to watch Mulaney, right?
Or McCarthy's.
McCarthy's.
Or Manhattan Love Story.
Right, exactly. All the M's. If it starts with an M, back away.
Yeah, just don't do it. All right. Well, until next time, then, thanks to everybody out there for listening to this edition of the TV Talk Machine. And Tim Goodman, it's good to be back talking TV with you. Thanks for being here.
You bet. And we'll do this weekly, and maybe eventually we'll take questions and who knows what.
Who knows what? You can find Tim on Twitter at Bastard Machine. Is that right?
That's right.
And you can find me at Jay Snell. So if you've got questions or things you want us to say, you can find us there. And we'll tell you more about how to reach us in the future. But that's it for now. Thanks to everybody out there for listening to the TV Talk Machine.